everyone. Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavioral Therapy class series. A trained therapist and secular member of Overeaters Anonymous will teach us new DBT skills every week that can help manage emotions, which can often trigger overeating. To find out more about secular overeaters, visit the website, secularovereaters.org. Now let's begin today's class.
Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills class. My name is Susan P., and I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. I've been a CBT therapist for, at this point, 36 years, and a DBT therapist for over 10 years. And I was so happy to run this meeting because of the incredible impact DBT has had on me, right, as a compulsive overeater, and even, you know, before I realized that as a person. So I find these skills incredibly useful in all kinds of different situations. I'm really happy that you're here. And this is an ongoing class. We're going to focus on a different skill each week. And every week, we're going to begin the class with a mindfulness exercise. And in DBT, mindfulness doesn't necessarily mean meditation. It means awareness, right? And so we're going to begin the class with an exercise in awareness. And sometimes it'll be, the goal will be for you to understand what's happening inside of you. And sometimes the goal will be for you to be able to fully participate in what's happening outside of you. And that's the goal today. So this is an interesting mindfulness exercise that my DBT team here where I work, there are seven of us, it's their favorite, they told me. And this is what it is, right? I want you to take a minute to think about something that's on your mind, something that is undone that you have to do that might keep you from really paying attention to what we're talking about today, right? Choose something that's on your mind. And then if you have a piece of paper or on your phone or whatever you want to do, write down what you have to do that's been plaguing you and the first two steps that you have to take. Go do that now. You have a minute. Okay, I think it's been about a minute. Anybody share what that was like? Having to do that or me asking you to do that? Was it helpful? Was it weird? What did you think?
Me just starting out, I'm kind of like, I'm not sure where to go with it. I can feel a million things going on in my head about where I'm at in the beginning. My laundry's running in the background, that kind of stuff. Nice.
That's right. So number one, it makes you aware of everything that's keeping you from sort of being present, right? That's right. Van.
Thanks, Susan. I am in the middle of what I'm calling the big move and packing and stacking things to make sure it'll fit in the trailer and all that. And that's really always at the front of my mind. Lately. So, of course, that's the big thing this morning. And I felt some relief, like I can put that aside and be more focused on the meeting good. Once I wrote it down. So thank you.
Good. I'm glad. Nora.
This is what it is. I like to learn a lot, all right? So I'm learning Excel. I want this is what I want, to learn Excel and to get my personal papers in order. And I find it very overwhelming because I don't like to work all day on paper. So they have a class that I'm taking in the afternoon, but I only decided that I'm going to take it for 1 month and then go back to my papers. I can't do this all day long. I can't do paperwork all day.
That's right.
That's how I settled it.
Okay. So you came to a decision.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I came to a decision. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Karen.
Hi. So if I'm not mistaken, you said to make two points of how to deal with what you're worrying about or what's on your mind.
That's right.
Is that right? Okay. So, I mean, mine was just work. It's a giant, like, work is stressful. So coming up with two points was difficult. Mm. So that was my experience.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll pass.
Amy, how about you?
Hey, so I got to work on taxes.
Oh.
Most stressful thing that I got going for me. So it almost became like a visualization exercise for me, just kind of visualizing that I was going to gather my papers and sit at the computer, and that was the first step. And then the next step was to find the program that I need and breathe. And that really helped calm me and gave me kind of a track to run on. So thank you.
Good. I'm so glad. Vicky.
My desk is a mess. And I'm also just stressing because I'm in a long distance relationship and the person visiting me in June, and I'm just making lists upon lists of things I have to do to my apartment to make it more, mainly my room, to make it more presentable, because the living room looks okay, but for the most part. But it's just, I was just looking at my desk and the clutter is actually driving me crazy. And I'm also taking a cartooning class, which was bad timing to do it, but that was when it was available. So I'm just freaked out about the lack of space on my desk and how I need to make it more organized. And I have ADHD, so everything is like, but I'm having a cleaner come today, so that's fine. So I'm sort of cleaning for the cleaner, you know, and I tried to do as much before this meeting as possible of cleaning for the cleaner, and but I still have some more, but I have a half hour after the thing ends, so yeah.
Thank you. Matilda.
Good morning. Yeah, I just came across. I took training last week in Winnipeg, and mindfulness was part of it. And last night, like I'm work. I'm from Winnipeg, but I work in St. Theresa Point First Nation, and I have was meeting with clients yesterday. There's It was really sad for me to find out there's four deaths in the community, all males. And anyway, coming to bed last night, I started thinking about all these things going on in my head. And then I started thinking about mindfulness, to be in the present. And I also pray, and I also prayed to the Creator to help me. And then I was breathing in and out, so that's how I deal with that. I have PTSD. I'm a boarding school survivor, a residential school survivor. I'm 77 years old, and I've been dealing with this since learning about trauma. But I knew about mindfulness years ago, but it didn't click until now.
I'm
Thanks.
glad you're here. Okay, so everybody who shared, thank you so much. It shows us that most of us have a million things going on in our minds. There's so many things in there, and not being aware of it, sometimes we're not clear that it could be getting in the way of us living our lives in the present. And so what some of you pointed out is that there are so many steps, and then if you think about them all, it can feel overwhelming. And so if you just pick maybe the first two or even the first one, I have somebody I'm working with who calls it micro planning, and he just does tiny little steps so that he doesn't feel overwhelmed and can actually go ahead instead of avoiding everything that he's doing. And so that was our second mindfulness exercise. We'll do one each week. I just want to do an introduction to what we're talking about today, which is a form of mindfulness, right? There's different ways to be mindful, right? And we're going to talk about being mindful of effectiveness. And let me tell you a story. Okay. I call this story the night my husband taught me to not be passive aggressive and ask for what I want. He didn't know he was teaching me this lesson, right? But it's 25 years ago. We were newly married. We're in the bed. I don't know what he did that pissed me off because I don't remember. I absolutely don't remember, but I do remember what happened. I decided that I was going to let him know how mad I was and stormed out of our bedroom and downstairs. And I'm waiting for him to come and like find out why I was mad. He didn't come. And so like I waited about a half an hour. I went upstairs and he is fast asleep. He didn't notice. Right? He is a very smart man, but he did not notice that I was mad. It's not that he didn't care. He just didn't notice. Right. That was a very important lesson for me. And I tell you this story because it highlights a couple of things, right? I was not effective that night.
I did not have the chance to tell him why I was mad, but I don't even know that that was my goal. Right? Here's what our goals are often in emotional situations. Our goals are often, here are our choices, right? Express our emotions. Let the other person know how we were feeling. Number two, avoid our emotions, not feel them, right? Which, for me has been something that has led me to overeating, right? I don't want to feel my emotions, so I'm going to eat. Another of our possible goals could be to influence someone's behavior to make them do what we want them to do. Another goal could be to actually make the situation better, in some way fix the situation, or influence a person in an effective way to give us what we want, right? So there are four possible goals. When we decide how we're going to react to an emotional situation, right, we often don't figure out what our goal actually is. If anybody was here last week, we talked about emotion mind, right? Often we're acting from our emotions, and our goal is often get my emotions out, make my emotions go away, make the other person do what I want them to do, right? But if we were to actually think about it, we probably have a more important goal in some way. I don't remember what I was mad at him about. I have no idea, right? But I'm sure that if I had talked with him about it, he loves me, right? He did then, he does now. He loves me. He would have, whatever it was, he would have listened, right? He's not a defensive guy. And he probably would have, we would have talked about it and come to some sort of compromise. But that didn't even occur to me then. So effectiveness, right, is an interesting concept. It's being mindful of what our goals are, what the important goals are. And our emotions so often get in the way, right, of us being effective. And effective, the definition of effective in DBT is an action that's taking us to our goals, not away from them. I love this concept. And at this point in my life, it takes me about 5 seconds to become mindful of what my goal is, and then I can do it because I have a lot of practice, right? It doesn't happen right away, but with a lot of practice, you can use this very quickly, right? You have a situation that's causing some kind of distress. And before deciding what you're going to do, figure out what is effective. And the definition of effective, remember, is not what's right or wrong, not what's fair or unfair, but will help me accomplish what I want to accomplish. And to me, that feels like one of the most important skills in life, probably. Okay, so we talk about effectively, right? What is it? Again, the definition of effective, you ask yourself, okay, is this going to get me closer to what I want to accomplish? Right? Okay. So how to do it? Number one, know what your goals are. And this can be really hard when you're very emotional, when emotions get in the way. Here's some interesting examples. Okay. We can mistake being afraid of something with not wanting it. Right? Sometimes we actually, our emotions can trick us. So if there's something that we really want, but we're also afraid, we may try to convince ourselves that we don't actually want it. And so then what we're going to do is not going to take us towards our goal. Being angry at someone, we can mistake being angry at someone with being afraid to lose them. We can mistake being ashamed of our actions with not wanting to be around certain people, so that if we're sort of embarrassed with something, we can convince ourselves that we don't like those people, and so we don't want to be around them to protect ourselves from feeling embarrassed. Okay, so we have to really sit down and think about what our goals are. And as I discussed with the incident with my husband, I had goals, but there were lots of conflicting goals. So you think about that, right? Is that I wanted him to know I was mad, right? I wanted mostly I wanted him to know that I was mad, but if I had thought about it, right? I think a greater, more important goal is I want to have a good relationship. I want to maintain this relationship. For both of us, it was a second marriage, right? We had both had relationships that didn't work out. And so a bigger goal than wanting him to know that I was mad at him and wanting him to read my mind about that, right, was actually this relationship is much more important than any of that. So we sort of sometimes have to sit down and think about, is there a bigger, more important goal? Because the goal is about expressing your emotions or trying to get somebody to do something. Those are goals too. It's not that they're not goals, but how do I identify which are the ones that are the really important ones? Right. And so for me in that time, I didn't realize it, but making this marriage work early on was probably a more important goal. Okay. All right. So you have to figure out what are all the goals there, but which is the one that you want to move towards? Which is the one that's going to be the best for you? Okay. Number two is no one react to the actual situation. What does that mean? Right? It's the situation that's in front of you, not the one that you wish were, not the one, right? Not the one that you think is fair, not the one that you think is right. You have to react to the situation in front of you. Okay. So in my perfect world, my husband would have been able to read my mind, right? He would know by my storming out that I was mad at him and I wanted him to come after me and we would work it out. But you know what? No matter what I wanted, that wasn't going to be the case, right? And so he couldn't read my mind. He didn't come running after me. And so I have to react to that situation. Okay. Here's another example, right? People who work the hardest should get raises. Wouldn't that be nice, right? If people who work the hardest should get raises, but we know that actually sometimes more socially skilled people get raises. Sometimes people who network more get raises. Sometimes people whose uncle owns the company get raises. And so we have to deal with the real world, not with the world that we think it is, so that we can be effective. Vicky?
When I was younger, I used to just vent all my
Right.
thoughts and feelings towards the other person. And then after a while, it was like, okay, so they're going to hear it and they're going to react defensively. And then we're going to have a fight. And it's not really going to solve anything. It's just going to cause another fight. It's so much easier to just ask someone a direct thing like, I'm frustrated because my roommate, I'm paying more rent, so my roommate will help me because I'm disabled and he often forgets things. And if I give him a lecture and I'm like, why do you forget stuff? You know, this is why blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really work. And he gets defensive, but I'm just like, could you pick up more this? Could you get that more that? He'll do it.
If you guys don't mind with hands up, I want to do the next one four because it's so related to what the other people are talking about. So be savvy about people. I am also a marital therapist. I do a lot of marital work. And one of the things I teach my clients is instead of criticizing, turn your criticism into a request. Right? There's something magic about not criticizing, but you still get to address it with the other person, because you have to understand that people, if they get too emotionally aroused, they actually can't listen anymore. And it is also a natural thing for people to get defensive when they're criticized, right? They have to defend themselves. This is why I did it. I don't want you to think I'm a bad person, right? I'm not a bad person. This is why I did it. This is what I was thinking. And then you can't listen. And sometimes people are not even listening to the person who's criticizing them. They're defending themselves in their heads, so that they can then defend themselves outside. It's completely an ineffective way of communicating, right? Criticism, defensiveness, criticism, defensiveness. Instead, be savvy. People, it's really punishing to be criticized, right? And people don't like to be with someone who they feel punished by. I don't mean they're spanked or anything like that, but it's an aversive situation. And people are much more happy, right, to listen to somebody who isn't criticizing them. That doesn't mean no one should ever ask for something to be different. We should absolutely do that. But if you can skillfully do it, and one of the classes we're going to do later on in a few weeks is about asking for things skillfully, right? Giving feedback skillfully so that people will listen to you, that so that they won't shut out. This, you know, when I do marital therapy and people are in my office and not online, I have pulse oximeters and they wear them on their fingers. And a pulse oximeter, one of the things it measures is your heart rate, right? And the alarm on the pulse oximeter shut off, like go off. There's an alarm, it beeps if your heart rate is over 95. Because we know that if your heart rate's over 95, you're too emotionally aroused and you actually can't listen. So then everybody stops and we self-soothe, maybe some deep breathing, go get a drink of water from the water cooler, whatever it is, right? So you have to be savvy about people. When are you the most likely to have the influence that you want on them? Right? Ask them in a way that is most likely to get what you want. Interesting question. Is that manipulative? I don't think it's manipulative. I think the definition of manipulative is trying to get somebody to do what you want with bad intent, right? With bad intent, right? Being influential, I think, is trying to get somebody to do what you want, but without bad intent, right? And, savvy people do that. How do I influence others? They don't sit down and think, oh, how can I be manipulative? It's like, what's likely to be most effective? And plus, I have my best interest in mind and the other person's best interest in mind. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. All right. So Matilda.
Okay, I tend to avoid. I didn't want to deal with things.
Yep.
And you mentioned also criticism. When someone criticizes me, I just totally shut down.
Right.
Yes, it's been very helpful because my husband and I are both in the program, and we're both working on ourselves. And but I am in my third marriage, and we've been married now for 30 years. But these are things I needed to make changes on myself. I'm a very impulsive person. And I have to pause. Many times I have to pause. Like I hear people saying compulsive, but for me, it's I'm impulsive.
Amy.
With the second one and the third one about know and react to the actual situation and then playing by the rules. I guess what I'm getting out of this right now that I wanted to share was to look at it from the other person's perspective. So
Right.
when you gave the example of criticizing, if I could just stop. In the moment that everything's spinning around and I'm at my partner, and I go, how would that feel if it was at me?
Right.
It can create a pause and then an ability to shift perspective and then re-language it. And so, thank you for kind of these reminders that, like you said, where it kind of pushes people away and it's almost like an automatic pilot. And rather than me sitting there all day beating myself up or trying to analyze, why am I doing that? Just kind of get out of my own head and my own sort of, I guess, what I want to say in a negative way is a narcissistic thinking and look at it from someone else's point of view and
That's
then
right.
act from that position. Thanks.
That's right. That's right. Because it's more likely to be effective and achieve what you want. That's right. Donna.
My partner is seriously ill. He went from 179 to now he weighs 120 and he's 6'1".
Wow.
He has a horrible problem gaining weight. And so my thing is I'll bring up something three times in a rational way, straightforward. So, whatever they're going to do, they're going to do. And it's a matter for me of how am I going to respond to that? At this point, I'm not going to say anything more about it.
Right.
When he was in his delusional sick state, and I'm watching him starve, and he won't accept help, and he's turning away the ambulances.
Yeah, and I think that's so hard. It's hard to know what to do when you're watching somebody do something that's dangerous. And I guess all you can do is you've tried what you know to be the best or what you hope is the best, but it's not effective. It's not working. Right?
Well, I don't know. Maybe my goal is unrealistic.
Right, that's right.
So
And so I'm saying,
I think the
yeah.
goal is for you to express yourself in a very straightforward manner. Let it lie and see what occurs without gripping on that,
Right.
gripping on that answer, like that patient time, which can be so charged, just to wait, see what happens.
That's right. Yeah. And so I think what you're saying is I've kind of figured out the most effective thing for me, which is not to continue
It
to
doesn't
hammer
work.
away at it. Right. That's right. But to, he's an adult. All right. Three is an interesting one. Play by the rules when necessary.
Right? Sometimes we don't want to play by the rules, but it is likely to be more effective in situations where we have less power. I'll give you an example. I went to graduate school with a wonderful African American woman. We were incredibly good friends. And she had, while we were at school together, she had one son, but then after that has had two more. So she's African American and her sons are African American. And she taught them that if a police officer pulls you over, even if you haven't done anything wrong, be incredibly polite and follow their instructions. Because you know what? I want you to still be alive. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right, right? But in that situation, right, she's saying you have to follow the rules so that you can stay alive, even if you haven't done anything wrong, right? Here's another example. You're going through TSA, right? And they ask you to do something that you don't think you should have to unpack this from your bag. But what happens if you don't follow the rules? Then you probably aren't going to get in the plane. And so what this part of being effective is saying, again, accept the actual situation in which you do not have power and do what works, not what's right necessarily. I mean, we're not asking you to do something that's against your values, right? But sometimes we have to sort of let go of that in order to accomplish what we want. And so the way to think about that is to do a quick cost-benefit analysis. Right? Do I want to be right? And if I want to be right, is it worth losing my life or losing this relationship or not being happy in some way? Right? So it's saying if the rules don't seem fair to you, but in order to accomplish the thing you want, the goal that you want, you have to follow them. And there are cases in which it will be worth it. Okay? That's what this is. Right? In certain situations, if the rules don't feel right or fair, it may, I'm not saying it's always, it may be worth it to put the principles aside, right? Or the idea of what's right aside in order to achieve your goal. This is, I think, one of the more controversial ones. What do you guys think about this one? Amy.
Let me know if I'm on track with this. I get it around authorities and certain situations that are more professional or roles. But in my situation, I think immediately of a sibling that always leverages her power and uses really punishing language with me. So I tend to shut down. And I realize it's a defense mechanism, and it's almost just better for me to just keep my head down and not try to prove a point, because every time I do try, it just blows up. And so it's sort of that risk benefit thing. I think the part that you later talk about and you'll get to is about how to let go of that, because there's a
That's
lot
right.
of emotionality that builds up. So in a situation where I'm not getting my needs met or being heard, there's a lot of resentment. So I look forward to hearing what you have to say about that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And by the way, we're going to start to talk, not today, but in future classes, we're going to talk about something called checking the facts, right? Which is to see, is the way I'm feeling, does it fit the situation? And if it does, then how do I effectively change the situation, which is relevant to what you're talking about, I think, right? And also the idea of interpersonal effectiveness. How do I get what I want? That sounds so selfish, but I don't mean it that way. We have goals. How do I achieve my goals? If I have to deal with another person in the most effective way. And so we won't, and I don't think we'll answer all your questions, Amy, today, but we will in the coming weeks for sure. Rory.
Hi. I agree the statement, play by the rules when necessary. It's very easy to test if it's effective and it works, because you can just go out into society and try to not do that. And it doesn't have to be with authority figures or, airport security. You can go to the post office and walk to the front of the queue,
Right.
in front of all the other people, and see what happens, because that can be effective. That can be effective, on a number of occasions, but there'll be an occasion when it will not be effective, and people will let you know very quickly that what you're doing
That's
is
right.
unacceptable. When it comes to, I think it also really quite accurately describes, when you are in the low power position. Mm-hmm. And that's a situation that people don't like to admit that they're in sometimes. But, you know, if you are stopped by the police or in a situation like that, I don't think it ever has worked in history to, you know, try to oppose that authority. And it always makes things worse.
And you make a very good point, is that it's not that we as individuals are necessarily powerless, because we can, if there's some sort of injustice going on, we probably can address it ourselves in, you know, with somebody who has more power than we do. But boy, can we engage somebody with more power or find power in numbers? It's just knowing when and how, right? How to be more effective. And dealing with the situation that we have, and we recognize it is that we're all by ourselves, dealing with somebody with more power, right? It's important to play by the rules, but we can then challenge the rules when we have more power or have more people with more power on our side. It's a very good point. Thank you, Rory. Van?
I feel like I've had a little bit of a breakthrough. I'm actually stuck way back at the beginning, because I've always thought, well, recently, when I gave it some thought, I don't really have goals. I just, you know, I'm on a path. And I gave it some thought, and it's like, yes, I do. And it's an open-ended goal. My goal is better mental health. And I remembered that about 16, 18 years ago, when I first retired, I thought, now what do I do? And it seemed like everybody was talking about enlightenment. And I thought, okay, I'll seek enlightenment. And that's been in the back of my mind. And now I see that as pretty much the same thing. So I'm seeing it as not necessarily an end point to a goal, something to achieve, but it can be the process of better mental health. So thank you.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Alan.
You know, I realize that I have dynamics. I live in a co-housing community with 30 neighbors I interact with regularly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes conflicts and stresses come up, and I know what I would like the outcome to be. And I sort of have enough sense of what's reasonable ways to present it in terms of social intelligence and stuff. But equally, the other people are black boxes, or they're mysteries, you know, and you don't know what that person borderline personality is, that person OCD, is that person this, is that person that. So you could kind of take a reasonable approach and have it completely backfire because you don't really know who you're dealing with. And then it gets quite a bit more challenging. So I'm kind of curious, when you're dealing with people that are more mysteries about their let's just call it their mental health or their emotional intelligence, then what do you do?
Such a good question. And for me, and we're going to talk about this in a few weeks, something called opposite action, right? Often if somebody seems upset with us, remember, I told you the natural response is to be defensive, right? Or to withdraw. But a really effective response is curiosity, right? Find out why. Find out more information. And often that clears up the whole situation. Right. But I find often curiosity doesn't occur to us. We have to defend ourselves or protect ourselves, but we can find out more information, be curious. Do you think that would be helpful, Alan?
Well, in one particular dynamic, which is a bit long to explain here, I was a little bit going to do that, but I asked a few people who knew that person much better than me. And their basic advice was, one person said, I'm pretty sure she's OCD, she's this, she's that. And that if you engage with her, it will just get worse. No matter how you engage with her, but I only figured that out by having curiosity, by quote, probing with others, which is trickier. And then at my own level is the dynamic of wanting to be liked. And I sort of had to let go of that, but it's hard to let go of that. You want people you interact with regularly to like you. So even that I struggle with, quote, how do you let go of your own emotional stuff? And you have no ability to actually change the situation.
That's right. Okay. So maybe we'll talk about that next. I would love to finish up this page, right? Which is let go. Let go, right? Let go of vengeance, useless anger, and righteousness when it hurts you and doesn't help you achieve your goals. So that sounds really difficult, I think. Sometimes those feelings can be so strong, right? But if we then become mindful of what our goals are, right? Bring it into awareness. What am I trying to accomplish here? And what is dwelling on these emotions? Is this helping me in some way? Right? It can be very hard to let it go, though. Sometimes the feeling of being wronged, or people being mean to us, or people treating us unfairly, we play over and over and over again in our minds. And it's hard to let that go. So one of the things I want you to do is to just be aware that you're doing it, be aware of how much you're doing it, and then ask myself, is thinking about this over and over again, is this helping me achieve my goals? Most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, it's actually taking us further away from what we want to accomplish. It has a name. It's called rumination. And rumination is incredibly unhealthy for us. I'm a therapist who uses evidence-based practices, which means that I treat people with treatments that research has shown that they're effective and that they work. And so I'm up on the research, and I know that the research shows that rumination is predictive of non-recovery from depression. The more people ruminate, the less likely they are to stop being depressed. And some of the newer research on rumination even shows that the best way to handle rumination is to treat it as a bad habit. And what do we with bad habits? We recognize when we're doing them, and we replace them with something better. Right? We don't just say stop and it stops. So that if I wanted to stop biting my nails every time I noticed my hand coming to my mouth, right? I would then go do something else. Like, I don't know. I'm bad about thinking of examples in the moment, right? But what can I do instead of bite my nails? I could rub my hands together or something like that, right? Just change the movement, build a new habit. Okay? So the answer here is it can be really hard to stop rumination, right? But it's really, really bad for you. And so when you notice it, the best thing that you can do is decide you're going to replace the rumination with something else. Either think about something else, make your mind go to something else, or do something else which is even more effective, right? Go, I don't know, right? Put something away, look at your phone, something like that, replace it. Okay. All right. Let's go to the next page. Okay, so here's some sample situations. I don't want to do all of them because we actually don't have time, but let's do a couple. All right, let's look at the third one. You have 15 minutes to eat your lunch and want to warm it up in the lunchroom microwave. The last person to use it left the microwave completely splattered with food. You feel angry, annoyed, and grossed out. Instead of warming up your lunch, you buy two candy bars from the vending machine because you're so mad. Okay, what would happen if you do what you feel like doing? What do you think would happen? Well, let me do versus what are some more effective responses? What are some things that might be more effective with your goals? Vicky.
Yeah, I think I would just clean it, I think, but I would be mad. But I'm not really the kind of person that leaves a sign, but I might in that circumstance be like, please clean the microwave after you use it. But I'm not really a sign person, but if I knew who it was, I would try to be like non-confrontational. I'd be like, oh, did you know your lunch just seemed to have exploded in the microwave? And then see if they would clean it up. And then if they just brushed me off and were like, oh, I'm busy, I'd just be like, but I wouldn't. I mean, the thing is with the candy bars is it's very frustrating to have to clean up someone else's mess, but
So that if you'd go, like, I get it. Well, then I can't have my lunch because this is disgusting. And so I have to eat something. And since I'm mad, I'm going to go grab something quick. It sort of, like makes sense in the moment, maybe, but it is, but I know we're all here for a reason, and that would be counter to our goals, right? And so, what is going to be the best for you and what is going to help you reach your goals? That's the response that you want to come up with. Right. So keeping our goals in mind, especially in situations where we're feeling some strong emotions, is what we're after here. Karen?
I was just thinking of an effective response. My emotional response would be to be very entitled. if I don't know who it is, then I don't know. Maybe make some loud noises or something. But that would be my emotional brain, which is quite destructive. But yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to practice more and what I would hopefully do is just let it go. Clean it up, let it go. And then if it's a continuing pattern, then, you know, bring it up with someone in management, something like that. But, you know, you don't have control here. So just let it go and do what you have to do and just deal with it when you can.
Eat up your lunch and eat it, right?
Yeah.
Right. We all need to be nourished in order to work at our best. The situation isn't ideal. You don't know who did it. Heat up your lunch, you know, clean it up if you need to, eat your lunch. And then I love the idea of going to management. Let them deal with it, right? Good. Amy.
Well, I usually take the passive approach and put a note up. But I did have a work situation where the boss was the one doing exactly this.
Okay.
And I think what happened was finally someone just got really aggressive and obnoxious and loud. And it kind of became then sort of a group mentality because then everyone chimed in together. I just don't know if that's really the right way to go about it. Maybe there's a nicer way where if there's a nice rapport to be able to just pull someone aside quietly and just say, no, hey, I just find... Like, I think I statements always work best. Yes. So say, look, I just find this is what's happening. So I've been taking care of it. And I just want you to know in case, you know, you're not, you know, and you becomes attacking.
That's right.
So that's part of the skill set I'm trying to learn. Thanks.
That's right. We're going to wrap up the meeting. Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a small donation.